Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Meg Hubeck's mission is both simple and overwhelming: teaching civil discourse to those who have yet to vote, our young people. She knows she has her work cut out, but insists you have to make a choice whether to engage or isolate. And I've made a choice to engage, to inspire other people, because I see what it's done for me. Meg's engaged, all right. She's the Director of Instruction for the Youth Leadership Initiative at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. UVA was founded by Thomas Jefferson in 1819. In her role, Meg has connected with 70,000 teachers across the country, providing them with full lesson plans that include using a mock election and e-Congress simulations to model what actually happens in Congress. The goal is to prepare students, even as young as kindergartners, to be active, constructive participants in American democracy. Following in her father's footsteps, he taught at-risk students. Meg began her teaching career in 1982, spending a dozen years working at the middle and high school levels in low-income areas of Baltimore. She also spent time overseas. In 2009, she was in post-Civil War Sri Lanka, and then 2 years later, traveled to Afghanistan. Meg has a BA in History, a Master of Arts, and a Master's of Education in Curriculum and Instruction. Meg, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. It's just a pleasure to be here.
So let's start with the obvious for me. Did you always know you'd be a teacher?
Yes, I did. I spent a lot of my early years going to work with my father and getting to know his students and seeing, interacting with young people, with young people. And I can remember playing school as a kid, and it was always like my favorite thing to do. I don't know that I thought I was going to do this much with it, but it's been a really rewarding career, and I love working with young people. It's really an honor and a privilege to be able to do so.
What grades did you teach when you first started?
When I did my graduate work at Towson University, I was working at a high school in Northwest Baltimore. So that was my first real experience with teaching, and then I taught 7 years in the middle school level, mostly sixth and seventh grade social studies, but I did a little art and I did a little language arts. We kind of did what we had to do to really provide a enriching environment for our students. And then I spent 5 years teaching in the high school, social studies primarily, but also art there as well. So you kind of, when you're a teacher, you kind of have to do what you have to do. And you have to make yourself as marketable as possible, so that you can always take advantage of opportunities that are coming up. And kind of that's what I did.
I mentioned that you taught in low-income areas. How did those experiences impact you?
Well, one of the things that I really realized in my teaching position, particularly at one of the middle schools where I taught, was that a lot of parents didn't feel comfortable coming to the school. They didn't feel welcome. Their own experiences with school may have not been pleasant, or may have not been positive. Some people were new immigrants to this country, and so the schools seemed a bit intimidating. Maybe they felt a little intimidated by the fact that we were teachers, that we had this certain amount of education. And I think that is one of the things that my wonderful, wonderful principal really instilled in us, was that we had to break walls down between the people we were working for, and I take that very seriously. I work for those people, for their children, to have a better life. So we had to break down walls and try to make an inclusive community where everyone felt welcome in discussing the progress of these children. So we did a lot of really great things to help bring people together, and it's really where these ideas originated for me.
Was it a real mix of students from all different backgrounds?
It was a primarily African-American community. But within that, we had immigrants from Africa, the islands. So there was some diversity, but primarily African-American school.
So you teach for 12 years, and
right?
Then you come to have a match with the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Why don't you provide for us a history? Because I bet there are a lot of people who don't know about this institution.
So the Center for Politics, I started using it as a teacher when I was teaching at a high school for the arts in Baltimore County, Maryland. And how I first was came to know about it was I picked up a magazine, The Social Educator, and inside there was an advertisement for this program called the E-Congress. And I was responsible for teaching ninth graders, so like 14 or 15-year-olds, how to write a bill that could be introduced in Congress. And I wanted to put my head in the oven the first year I did it. It just was the most
overwhelming
project. It was because it was hard for the kids to get our heads around something that's kind of has very little structure and seemed like such a big and overwhelming task. So I was looking for new ideas. And so I came across this advertisement and I said to myself, well, nothing could be worse than last year. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try this program out. And it was so wonderful because it broke the task of writing a bill down into manageable portions and allowed the students to be successful in researching, drafting, and then passing a piece of legislation. When I was at Towson University, we considered ourselves facilitators of active learning, and it's something that I really carry with me throughout everything that I do, that I'm a teacher, but I'm a facilitator of action. So I really loved the e-Congress, and I started using the Youth Leadership Initiative lesson plans, and I just thought, wow, this is awesome, and it makes my job makes me more efficient in the classroom. So one day, for no reason other than I was trying to figure out something different to do, I went to the YLI website, and they were looking for, at that point, an assistant director of instruction. And I love teaching. I had no intention of leaving teaching, but the opportunity to work at the University of Virginia Center for Politics seemed really intriguing, and I at least wanted to see if they would invite me to Charlottesville to do the interview, because Charlottesville is gorgeous, and any weekend there is worth it. So I just kind of went on a lark, and I got to know the Center for Politics, which is an awesome, nonpartisan, not-for-profit unit of the University of Virginia, and the work we do is amazing, and it is it's so much what I believe in that we really want people to think for themselves and then act on those beliefs. So we really, everything that we do here at the center, whether it's our public programs, whether it's our documentaries, whether it's the Youth Leadership Initiative, whether it's our international outreach, Global Perspectives, everything we do is intended to promote the skills of our Republican democracy by getting you to think for yourself and act on those beliefs. And so I got the job. I moved to Charlottesville like 2 weeks after school was over.
What year was this?
2004. So just prior to the election of 2004. And it was like a baptism by fire, because those are the busiest years here at the Center for Politics, but it was so exciting, and I really didn't have time to think about what I had done. I just had to move quickly and hit the ground running, and that is exactly what I did. While I miss the classroom and I miss the daily interaction with students, I get to do some pretty amazing things, and I'm so passionate about the mission of civil discourse that I just have to do this. I'm compelled to do it.
So you introduce this coursework to other instructors?
Yes, via our website, theyouthleadership.net, and it's a free website. Everything on our website is free. There is absolutely no catch. I when I started, I thought there had to be, because the materials were so great. But all you have to do is register with the website to receive all of our materials. And so from our website, when the teacher logs in, they have access to our major simulations, the mock election and the e-Congress. They have access to a database of well over 100 lesson plans, K through 12. We have civic minutes, like really short activities that elementary school teachers can incorporate into their day. We have all kinds of middle school and high school materials. We also have a list of literature that supports civics and government so that librarians, media specialists can incorporate those into their collections. We also have lots of games. I'm a big fan of games.
Teaching tools.
Yes, and especially ones that are not on the computer, because I feel like the kids now have so much access to online things that I like to have kids play together in a room the old-fashioned way and interacting. And that's kind of another like a sub-theme of this civil discourse, is helping people reconnect with one another and get off maybe the phone sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. For Constitution Day several years ago, we created a downloadable board game, and you can't win unless you compromise.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really fun. And so it engages students. They're learning about the Constitution, and they're also learning some social skills, talking to one another. How do you compromise? How do you get to win the game?
But when you joined the center in 2004, the curriculum was more bare bones?
Well, it was wonderful, I will tell you, because before me, there was, of course, a wonderful people before me who set the groundwork. And then we have local teachers that help us to develop really great resources. So it's not me alone. It's not like I came here and magic happened. It's been a series of over that, I guess, coming up on 20 years. I don't know. I'm not good at math. that's why I'm a social studies teacher. But, you know, it's been a process of building what we do and making it stronger, refining our mission, and kind of moving forward over that process. But it's been a lot of really wonderful people, particularly, I have to say, Professor Larry Sabato, our founder, is the impetus for all of this. And he is really the person that inspires me and other people, everyone here, to keep on working, and that we need to do this to make our democracy stronger.
Your organization and what you do takes on a different intensity, doesn't it, now, because of the fact that we have kind of a fractured country. So teaching civil discourse is almost, it's a necessity. It's critical.
It is. And I can't be more adamant about it. I mean, part of what we're seeing, the polarization, and people want to blame the political parties, people want to blame the candidates. We are all to blame. Okay. We are all to blame as citizens of this country. We have not practiced what we preach, which is inclusivity, reaching out to others, being a good neighbor, talking to one another. We have instead chosen to isolate ourselves with like-minded people, whether it's by the media and choosing one type of media over the other and then just following that, whether it's actually moving to a community and living only with people like yourself, whether it is, you know, in schools, sometimes students isolate themselves based on, you know, like cliques that they would have. But we really have to break down those walls, and we have to say, I am a citizen. What is most important to us? Our union is what is most important, I believe. I think back to after the Revolutionary War, at the time, right after when the Constitutional Convention is beginning, we're going through this same process. You had newspapers that supported one side of the Federalist or Anti-Federalist argument, like sort of like our media today, and people were pulling apart. And what we had to do was come back together through the writing of that Constitution and break down those boundaries so we could be a unified country. So I see this as another time that we need to call for renewal, where we need to call citizens to take responsibility. I think it will be very challenging, which is why I've chosen to start with young people, because I'm looking for a bottom-up approach. So I'm hoping that by teaching civility, starting in kindergarten and working our way up, that the younger people can rub off on the older people. And then those people that refuse to change this is sad to say, but eventually they won't be around.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I really think young people are open to these ideas. If you go into a classroom and talk to especially elementary school students, you'll find, you know, they're open to the idea of meeting other people and being included, and they're not fearful. So I think we need to start with that, and we really need to improve these skills. But that being said, I also, and one of the things that my talking turkey, taking the diss out of civil discourse, so, you know, that came about as a watch of Jerry Springer or some of those really volatile talk shows. I wanted to take the talk show element out of politics. What we try to do is empower not only the students to talk about politics in a civil way, but we're also wanting to bring parents and teachers so that that whole community is empowered to have this rational discussion. And I think that's something that is unique to what we're doing, is that we're really trying to empower. A lot of times parents don't talk politics at home, not because they don't want to, but maybe they don't know about it. Maybe they feel that they don't want to look bad in front of their children. And so if you provide them resources and materials in a quick and efficient way that they can learn about this, and then they can lead the conversation at home at the dinner table, and then the teachers are learning this and incorporating those skills of civil discourse into their classrooms, and then the students are practicing in the classroom and at home, you have a win situation.
Yeah, but hold on a second. Let me play the devil's advocate here, Meg.
Okay, I mean, like that.
That's all very well and good, but all this just fell apart with the election. You can stand on your head and you can take the diss out of discourse, but it took on a life of its own. What was your reaction over the course of the year of campaigning, as well as, you know, the final days leading up to the election? Did you feel on some level that all your work was for naught?
I'd love to say no. Yes, of course, I'm human. Okay, and I've dedicated my life to this. However, a couple of things give me optimism. One is my knowledge of U.S. history, which has helped me so much during this year. Understanding a lot of where we've been so that I can see a light at the end of the tunnel. Another thing, and I don't know that I can do this in my sphere, but I think everyone in our country can do this as a sphere, is demanding better. We teach media literacy in the Youth Leadership Initiative. We have many activities on media literacy. I would advise people to become more media literate. Don't get all of your information from one source. If something seems a little out there, you need to investigate it. The fake news and the insisting that if you say something over and over again, it becomes a fact, that's up to me to figure out. That's my role as a citizen, is to research. And so all of us need to take a bit of that responsibility and say, you know, just question what is going on and what these candidates are saying. I mean, we can't have elections that are as nasty as this. And I'm an optimist like James Madison. I come to the party prepared. Okay, James Madison, in writing the Constitution, did a lot of research. That's why he was optimistic we could create a government that would last as long as it has. I'm optimistic because we have lots of really great people in this country. And if everybody just did a little bit more in terms of paying attention to civil discourse and insisting upon it, people are not insisting upon it. They're just accepting it as it is. I really think we as citizens have the power. I think people have truly been paying more attention, and we're seeing a little bit of the March on Washington, people calling their congressmen. I mean, you are seeing a power of the citizen if the citizen will wake up and engage. So we're trying to do that with young people. Is it an easy job? No. Is it frustrating? Yes. But we can't give up. No, of course not.
But I think the interesting dichotomy is what you're doing and what you're trying to do in terms of shaping young minds, and then what they see outside the classroom on some level is in direct opposition to what they're being taught.
Yeah, and that's why the teachers have to bring it in. We have a contract in terms of setting the stage for civil discourse, how they do it, and having parents, students, and teachers sign it. We also, you know, have lesson plans with materials to show people how to do this. And we advise starting with cool topics, something like your favorite movie, and modeling these behaviors. It's not something you can learn overnight. I think, you know, it will take a while. We won't see results right away. But if we can get teachers on board and we can get parents on board, we're going to see a difference. And then we can talk about, on TV, I saw this. Well, how would you have handled that conversation? Mm-hmm. What would be a more productive way to have tried to get across that point? I mean, that would be a great lesson. I would love to teach it.
Also, you have an international program. And I mentioned that in 2009, yes, you went to Sri Lanka. And then, right, in 2011, you were in Afghanistan under, yes, the aegis of your job.
Yes. So Global Perspectives on Democracy takes what we do with the Youth Leadership Initiative and expands it to international guests, so we work with high school students, but we also work with adults. And so what we do is we bring them to Charlottesville to do immersion workshops in leadership and democracy building. It's really wonderful. So as a result, I had worked with a group of marginalized communities from Sri Lanka. It was just following their civil war. In fact, when they were here, there was still a very intense IDP situation and violence in the north of Sri Lanka. So we went immediately following their civil war to follow up with our participants, see what they were doing, and try to offer support. It was an amazing, amazing experience. We had worked with Afghanistan for 2 summers, and so my colleague and I got to go there for 10 days to Kabul and visit with the participants, see what was going on there, and see firsthand why what we're doing is so important. I'm still thinking about them in my mind and the lessons I learned, but I realized just how important compromise is. In both situations, compromise is viewed not as an asset, but as a detriment. And compromise can lead to your death. I don't want our country to become like that. I want to believe that by working together, by giving and taking, by moving the process forward, which is what compromise is, that we become closer as a nation and we value compromise. That is what has gotten us through so many crises. So we really have to not let this happen, because what's happening with our media, with people isolating themselves, is they're like, well, it's going to be my way or the highway. And that is not how our democracy is set up to work. I think sometimes people's ideas that everything needs to happen right away, you just get in there and drain the swamp, that is against the ideals of the founding fathers, who specifically chose a government that was slower and more deliberate and provided emphasis, and they valued compromise.
And this is what you try to impart to the,
exactly,
students who come from all parts of,
yes,
the world.
Ma'am.
So you host students for, yes, how long? What's an average stay for a group of students?
So our high school groups, we do Youth Ambassadors with World Learning, which is a great organization. They're our partner, and they'll be here for a week, 2 weeks. We had a group from Mongolia here several weeks ago, and they were here for 2 weeks, which was wonderful. So it just depends on what type of grant programs the State Department is offering.
So it's not your center that's sponsoring this. This is government money?
It's the U.S. Department of State, and in partnership for these programs with World Learning.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the contractee, and we're the sub-grant. So we do the academic training for other groups. So one of the major focuses of all of these programs sponsored by the government is that in the workshops, participants develop civic action plans that they will implement in their home country based on their experiences here in the United States.
You got your work cut out for you, don't you?
Yes, ma'am. I'll never be bored.
You'll never not have a job.
No. Right now we are running and jumping and we have lots of balls in the air. But I will tell you, it's really, I don't feel tired. I feel empowered. I feel energized.
You don't feel defeated?
No, I'm an optimist. But other people, especially after the election, called me with their moans and groans and moans and groans. And I was just like, we can't moan and groan. Let's move. Let's do something. And people have been reaching out to me. What can I do? And I give them advice. I give them ideas. That's what I use my Facebook page for. And so people follow me and they're doing those things and they're feeling better. So, you know, you can't give up just because things get hard. I mean, maybe that's the rugged individualist in me. I just feel like I got to keep going. I have to get out there. That's what I want my students to do. So that's what I have to do. I have to model the behavior.
You know, not for nothing, Meg, you would think that your program should be mandatory curriculum throughout the country. Forget the world for right now, but here, you know, throughout the country, that every school district should have your program.
Or should have civics ed in general.
As a mandatory, as not an elective.
But that's not the case. Very few states actually have very test in the civics realm. In this age of testing being the be all end all of everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's another show.
70,000 teachers. Right. That's a lot. If you can get the word out there and start these, you know, in kindergarten, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
It's important to start in kindergarten.
Wow.
The earlier, the better. You talk about special ed, they're talking about how if you start earlier with interventions, it actually is more effective and more efficient dollar-wise. I think the same thing with civics. The earlier you start, the less of a time commitment you'll have to make overall, and you'll be more efficient. People will have these skills, and it will just keep growing little incrementally, as opposed to trying to dump it on a high school senior just prior to turning 18 and voting.
Right, right, exactly. Instill the habits, the good habits at a young age.
Right.
That's a great way to end this program, Meg, on that kind of an optimistic note. And as I seem to say with great regularity to my guests, thank you for the work you do, because it is critical, important, empowering, and you're also inspirational. It's been my pleasure to get to know you and have a conversation with you, Meg Hubeck. And
I'm humbled to be able to do what I do and to serve my country in this way. So I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Meg. Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Yeah.